If one's main goal is simply to lose weight, then it really does not matter what one eats, provided that mice that ate a highly palatable, high-fat diet, a great-tasting diet, but only during a restricted feeding window of each 24-hour cycle, maintained or lost weight over time. Whereas mice that ingested the same diet, same amount of calories, but had access to those calories around the clock, gained weight, became obese, and quite sick. There is evidence that when people ingest artificial sweeteners, that it can create a just thinking can impact the effects of things like exercise on weight loss. Simply being told that movement is good for you can lead to weight loss, etc., led to significantly more body fat loss. So I think that spot reduction actually will soon be something that's possible using the appropriate technology. What you consume is less important than the amount of food that you consume, at least for sake of time-restricted feeding of the same amount of calories did lead to significant decreases in free testosterone. And I think a number of people will raise their eyebrows to that. So by eating around the clock, you're making yourself sicker. By eating at restricted periods of time each 24-hour day, you're actually making yourself sicker. If one's main goal is simply to lose weight, then it really does not matter what one eats, provided that the number of calories burned is higher than the number of calories ingested. However, there are many factors that impact that calories burned part of the equation. Some of those are obvious: amount of exercise, type of exercise, basal metabolic rate, how much energy one burns just sitting there, NEAT, non-exercise induced thermogenesis, where if people bounce around a lot and fidget a lot, they can burn anywhere from 800 to 2000 calories per day. So their quote unquote basal metabolic rate is actually much higher simply because they're fidgeters, whereas people who tend to be more stationary have a lower basal metabolic rate on average. Hormones such as thyroid hormone and insulin and growth hormone and the sex steroid hormones, testosterone and estrogen, those levels will also profoundly influence the calories out, the calories burned component of the calories in calories out equation. What you consume is less important than the amount of food that you consume, at least for sake of weight loss, not necessarily for sake of health. Growing up, I think we all know people who can eat a ton and never seem to gain any body fat, or people who seem to eat very little and seem to gain body fat very easily. And I was always intrigued by that. And it turns out the nervous system is the one that we can really control, both through behaviors and what we eat, but also in terms of this thing that we call thermogenesis. So one of the most powerful ways to stimulate epinephrine, which is also called adrenaline, from these neurons that connect to fat and to thereby stimulate more fat mobilization and oxidation is through movement. But I'm not talking about exercise. Shiver or shivering is a strong stimulus for the release of adrenaline, epinephrine, into fat and the increase in fat oxidation and mobilization. But shiver is not just induced by cold, and there are other subtle forms of movement that can greatly increase fat metabolism and fat loss. Many people who had low levels of body fat had a lot of resting tremor, not of the Parkinsonian type, but they would bounce their knee while they were sitting. When they would talk, they would engage in very angular movements. They were sort of electric. People that nod a lot, people that stand up and sit down a lot throughout the day, and people that pace burn anywhere from 800 to 2,500 calories more than the control group in the experiments that they looked at. That simply moving around a lot, even if those are subtle movements, greatly increases the amount of energy that you burn. And people who overeat, the people who can have the second or the third donut or donuts at all and don't seem to put on weight to the same degree, they are people that move around a lot, even when seated. Mice that ate a highly palatable, high-fat diet, a great-tasting diet, but only during a restricted feeding window of each 24-hour cycle, maintained or lost weight over time. Whereas mice that ingested the same diet, same amount of calories, but had access to those calories around the clock, gained weight, became obese, and quite sick. And as an additional second point, the mice that restricted their feeding window to a particular portion of 8 hours of every 24-hour cycle actually showed some improvement in important health markers. And what was even more incredible is that mice that only ate during a particular feeding window also experienced some reversal of some prior negative health effects. So by eating around the clock, you're making yourself sicker. By eating at restricted periods of time each 24-hour day, you're actually making yourself healthier, and you are activating certain processes that can positively impact both weight, either maintenance or loss of weight, and positively impacting things like liver health. Also, the expression of different things related to brown fat, the fat that increases your metabolism, and blood glucose regulation. Liver health, bile acid metabolism, energy expenditure, inflammation, liver metabolites. Many, many aspects of our health are impacted by when we eat, not just what we eat. If your main interest is maintaining and or building muscle, then it can be beneficial to ingest protein early in the day. Let's say you wake up at 7 a.m., your main interest is in hypertrophy or maintenance of muscle, then you would want to ingest some protein sometime before 10 a.m., but obviously if you're interested in getting the health effects of intermittent fasting, that you wouldn't ingest any food for at least the first 60 minutes upon waking. Now, it's not as if at 10:01 a.m., a gate slams shut and you can't generate hypertrophy. Of course, that's not the case. Time-restricted feeding of the same amount of calories did lead to significant decreases in free testosterone. And I think a number of people will raise their eyebrows to that and think, oh, well, then maybe time-restricted feeding is not for me. There are a number of important considerations, of course. One is, while the decrease in free testosterone was significant, it's also going to depend on where people start out. So if somebody has already low or modest levels of testosterone and it drops by 10 or 20%, that could lead them into a state of poorer performance and well-being. Whereas if somebody has higher testosterone, a decrease won't necessarily do that. A very interesting change in hormonal profile was cortisol, so-called stress hormone. Cortisol, of course, is also naturally released early in the day in a healthy way to wake you up and promote alertness, but you don't want its levels to be too high or to have peaks in cortisol late in the day. It's actually correlated with depression and a number of other untoward things. I would have thought that by restricting a feeding window to a particular time each day, that these hard training cyclists would have undergone increases in serum cortisol. And in fact, the opposite was true. They had significant reductions in serum cortisol as a consequence of time-restricted feeding. Because cortisol is lower, it may mean that the effects of testosterone or the reduction in testosterone is offset. And that's because cortisol and testosterone are always in this somewhat of a dance in terms of cortisol inhibiting the effects of testosterone largely and vice versa. For sake of hormone health, time-restricted feeding is compatible with quality hormone health, even in high-performing athletes. Based on everything we know and that we've discussed, I would not suggest that people restrict their feeding window to less than 8 hours, especially if they're training hard on a regular basis. And it's not just athletes that should pay attention to this. When we are working very hard, when we are psychologically stressed, when we are studying for exams, or we are in conflict with somebody on a regular basis, that creates a stress in the body that's very similar to that of physical training. The body and brain don't distinguish between physical stress and mental stress. It's all nervous system. Remember that. It's just cortisol and adrenaline. There's no special hormone just for physical stress versus psychological stress. Again, in thinking about what sort of feeding window will be right for you, we arrive back at this 8 hour time bin that seems flexible for most conditions, even high performing elite athletes. And I would say, just by logical extension, even for people that have a lot of stress in their life. There is evidence that when people ingest artificial sweeteners, that it can create a transient increase in blood glucose, followed by a transient decrease in blood glucose below baseline. This is thought to explain the increase in hunger caused by ingestion of things like aspartame and sucralose and things of that sort. I think it's fair to say that in moderation, the plant-based non-sugar sweeteners like stevia, in particular stevia, seem to have a minimal impact on overall blood glucose when considered over a fairly large time bin. Just thinking can impact the effects of things like exercise on weight loss. Simply being told that movement is good for you can lead to weight loss, etc., led to significantly more body fat loss, waist-to-hip ratio changes in the direction that most people would want, and all sorts of other positive effects on things like cardiovascular health, simply by the knowledge that movement and exercise can help various health markers. So this is remarkable, and it speaks to the power of the nervous system and the power of belief in governing aspects of our body and our physiology that one would otherwise think were outside our conscious control. The modern understanding is that it's not adrenaline released systemically, kind of bathing all your fat tissue, but rather it's neurons releasing adrenaline, epinephrine, locally, that in theory, exercise that stimulates the release of epinephrine, or exercise coupled with things like shiver or low-grade shaking movement, or the non-exercise activity thermogenesis, could in theory lead to local enhancement of mobilization of fat tissue. So I think that spot reduction actually will soon be something that's possible using the appropriate technology. Changing up the pattern of exercise, engaging in novel types of movements, may actually be one way that one can access these so-called stubborn body fat pads.